Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Robert Gerald Bernhoft, and I have the privilege of representing the Libertarian Party of Los Angeles County and Messrs. Brown and Agrella on this appeal of the CDCA District Court's dismissal of a Section 1983 political ballot access suit at the 12C judgment on the pleading stage.
Let me cut to the quick here. It's a very weird case. It appears that at this point, if you have people not from the district circulating the petitions are still going to be counted. It appears that there's no criminal violation unless people lie about whether they are residents or not residents. At the same time, it appears that California is continuing to tell people in the official documents they give out that they do have to be residents.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so what exactly is your problem? I mean, presumably, I looked carefully at your complaint to try and see, exactly what you're alleging as what the party is. Certainly the two individuals who now know all this, I mean, presumably will go and do the petitioning if they want to do the petitioning because nothing's going to happen to them, and the petitions are going to be counted. So if you have anything here, it has to be because there are other people that you would like to ask to do the petitioning who will then go out and get the pieces of paper and say, oh, but I'm not allowed to do this. I mean, is that your claim? What exactly is your problem?
Yeah. Your Honor.
Let me ask you this, too, if that fits in. I remember in law school we were given examples of dead letter law. You heard that expression?
Yes, Your Honor.
They got a lot of laws in Texas that are dead letter law. And, here, no one's ever, has anyone ever been prosecuted for violating these two code sections?
On this record, on 12C, motion for judgment on the pleadings, we have no idea what the enforcement history of the criminal provisions are.
But there is no criminal provision.
There is no criminal provision.
Yes.
Yeah. And
yes.
Excuse me, is there one?
Yes, Your Honor.
The only one that I know about it says you can't lie about it.
No, California Election Code Section 18203 makes it a felony make any false statement.
Right.
On any
circular petition,
et cetera.
You have to make a false statement. If you don't make a false statement, it's no problem.
Here's the problem, Your Honor. These plaintiff appellants.
Do you know of anyone that's been prosecuted?
I personally do not, Judge.
And your clients have not been threatened with prosecution individually, have they?
No, Judge.
No,
we have a very limited record. The motion that was filed by the defendant, Secretary Bowen, was styled as a 12C motion for judgment on the pleadings, but it was addressed up 12B6. They made an untimely filing.
Well, I don't think we're trying to be concerned about the procedural posture, but really with whether there's any beef here other than an abstract desire to force a change in the law to match what actually happens in real life, which is that nobody enforces this law. There's no evidence that it's ever been enforced against anybody.
Or anyone.
Then we have a fundamental misunderstanding about.
Then we have this wonderful word that I remembered.
Desuetude.
I looked it up again.
Desuetude and moribundity.
Moribundity.
A moribund statute.
Yeah,
this
well,
case
we know moribundity, but desuetude is kind of it's a sleepy word, you know. And I even got my I don't have it with me, but I can push a button and it'll pronounce the word for me. It's pretty good.
All right.
So, I mean, there's no immediate threat here that anyone's.
The Secretary has enforced the California Code Section 8066 that requires petition circulators to be registered voters in the relevant political district or subdivision for decades. It's been enforced.
How do you mean enforced? Do you mean it appears on the form, or do you mean that they've actually let me finish the question.
Sure.
Do you mean that they've actually rejected non-conforming petitions?
Most definitely. Most definitely, Your Honor. I would refer to
the
court.
Where does that appear in the complaint?
The plaintiffs alleged that their signatures would not be counted if they did not supply the circulator affidavit, and that is true. The signatures they collect
will not. That's never happened to them, though. They're speculating that this could happen to them, correct?
Well, it's the custom and the practice and policy of the Secretary of State, according to Secretary Bowen's own memorandum, which was submitted on judicial notice by the defendant appellants, and the court granted that. It's a January 27, 2010 memo, and I'm referring directly to.
They're not going to enforce it.
I'm sorry?
I thought what it says is that in fact, they are going to count it.
Well, it's a little bit confusing, but if you look to the addendum, page 407, and if the court would permit me, judicial decisions. California courts have uniformly held that a clerk's duty relative to examining petitions or candidates' papers is limited to two responsibilities. One, to determine whether the petition or paper contains the requisite elements specified by the law. That's the relevant factor here. Continuing to the second paragraph, as to the first duty, to certify that the petition or papers contain the requisite elements required by law, the court in Dodge v. Free, 32 Cal Appeal 3rd, 1973 case 436 held that the clerk need not verify a petition section that does not contain a circulator's affidavit, one of the elements required by law to be included in a petition. In upholding the clerk's refusal to verify petition signatures and to count them, the court concluded that the required affidavit was lacking in the absence of a subscription and date. And that's been the law of California since 1973.
I'm not sure.
Puts in an affidavit and gives its correct address, and the address is not in the district. What indication is there that they're not going to count it?
The affidavit does not permit that. The affidavit affirmatively requires at the outset in the penalty of perjury section in the Jurat that you have to swear that you are a registered voter in the district in which that candidate would be voted on. There's no, and under California law, if you alter that form, you're not permitted to alter the form, and if it's incomplete, even to the minor detail of not being dated, the clerks are instructed, and California law says that those signatures cannot be counted or verified.
Are those forms, is that form in the record?
Yes, it is.
It's Exhibit D. It's on page 61, I think, of the excerpts, Volume 2, but I think that's the right one.
Yes,
but
we
what
have
if
some.
You what if you just what if your client were to cross out qualified to register to vote in California and said Texas? I, Jane Smith, am registered to vote in Texas. My residence address is yada yada yada, Austin, Texas. And all the valid signatures that were of voters here on the petition, what indication is there anywhere that that would be turned away or that the circulator would get into trouble?
Well, I don't know if the circulator would get into trouble. Here's the dilemma and the Hobson's choice that's faced by these plaintiffs' appellants and other similar.
Let me tell you this, so you're clear where I stand. I don't think that these statutes really belong on the books. You know, I don't know how they got on there. And but I remembered what I learned in law school, and it's piqued my curiosity. So you know, maybe we ought to get the state attorney here. Let's ask him questions.
Well, Your Honor, if I might please.
Why don't you just have a seat and let's ask him what's going on, huh?
If the court wishes me to, yes.
That's what I'd like you to do.
Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Michael Whitmer appearing on behalf of the Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen.
Now, you have a piece of paper that you give out to people who want to qualify for the ballot, and it says that the candidate may appoint persons to circulate the nomination paper. Circulation shall be voted in the district or public subdivision in which the candidates to be voted on shall serve only in that district or political subdivision. Somebody gets that piece of paper, says, oh, I can't do this, and doesn't do it. And you want, and your view is that even though you're continuing to tell people that, when you can easily not tell people that, I mean, you seem to be saying, You don't say it is unconstitutional. You say it probably is, or it almost surely is, and yet you continue to tell people the opposite. Why would you want to do that, and why isn't that at least a problem for somebody who might believe what you say? And therefore not, let's leave the standing of these people aside for a minute. Somebody else is going to say, get this paper, piece of paper. I was going to go circulate a petition in San Francisco, but I live in Alameda County. I can't do it. I believe what they're telling me, so I'm not going to do it. Now, the fact that he can't prove that it's going to be, that anybody's ever been prosecuted or that the petition, the signatures haven't been counted as a way to create respect for the law. I mean, that's different than a statute in destitute, because every day you're telling people this.
Well, to simply declare what the law states is...
Even if it's unconstitutional.
All the secretary can do is say, folks, this is the law.
Well, then, somebody should be able to bring a case, and let's leave aside who for a minute, but somebody should be able to get you where the remedy is take that out of this piece of paper, because it's unconstitutional.
The remedy would arise when somebody actually attempted to enforce the statute.
Why? Why isn't the fact that somebody, a good faith person who wants to know what they have to do, I mean, going to they're not just going to the statute books. Maybe then they have to look something else up. They are believing what you're telling them. You are telling them this, and they're believing it. And you want them to not believe it because it's not going to be enforced. That's what you're saying. I can tell them something. I can give a directive, and yet they should. I should think that they're not going to do it because they're supposed to do research and find out that we don't really do that.
I mean, you know, just like. Go ahead.
I'm having a little difficulty pulling the core of the question out.
The question is, why do you tell people something that is unconstitutional if you think it's unconstitutional? That's the question.
I think what it all boils down to is, doesn't the secretary have a responsibility to say if she thinks that a particular statute is unconstitutional?
Well, I have a slightly...
I think that's the argument that they're making. That
well, I think right now all we're arguing about is who can make the argument. We're not here being asked to rule on the constitutionality or not of this set of statutes. That's not in front of us. What is here is whether these particular individuals, either as a matter of Article III standing or prudential discretionary matters of standing, are the right ones to do it. And what would be one appropriate plaintiff in your mind, just by description? Is it somebody who comes to pick it up and says, I want an injunction because I want to circulate this in a different county, the neighboring county, and I can't do it, and I want this declared unconstitutional so I can go circulate this right now so that it's concrete and present? Is there some other kind of plaintiff that you could envision?
I believe that the appropriate plaintiff would be one who has actually been held to comply with the statute.
But there is no such person, because you're telling right. You're not going to enforce. So nobody is. So therefore,
it's
you
it's a dead letter law.
So even though if this
okay,
is not,
so if we filed an order saying this is dead letter law. And we have the representation of the what's your client's position?
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State of the state of California, that it is dead letter law because you've just said it, and that means that it will not be enforced.
And it won't be told.
State of destitute. Mm-hmm. See, I've been trying to write opinion with that word in it.
This would be a great opportunity.
Yeah, and so you would like that, huh?
In some ways, it would solve a lot of problems. Because
why can't you just take this out of the pieces of paper?
Well, here's the secretary has a dilemma. She's a constitutional officer, and she is forbidden
all right,
so you
need an order declaring it unconstitutional, or you're going to keep telling people something that's unconstitutional.
She is forbidden by the state constitution from declaring a statute unconstitutional.
And yet you're saying that, and that's your point A, and your point B is nobody can sue it and get that declaration. So therefore, point three is she's going to keep telling everybody things that we all believe to be unconstitutional.
So we could say that...
Is that all right? Just... Is one, two, and three correct?
The difficulty here is it really boils down to a separation of powers between the Secretary of State and the legislature.
Well, couldn't the Secretary
have said, this is the law. The Secretary is enjoined to oversee...
What if the Secretary of State were... I mean, this is far afield of what we actually have to decide here, but couldn't she request introduction of a bill to repeal these laws with an opinion attached explaining why that would be a good idea or a constitutionally sound idea and make this problem go away? It's been there since, 1969? And, presumably she, without violating separation of powers, she could implore the legislature to fix this for her.
Yes.
But it seems to me that the kind of person that in the situation I was talking about, there would be a concrete moment when that could be done to say, here I am, I have a piece of paper in my hand, I live in the wrong county, I want to circulate this in the neighboring county, give me an injunction declaring this requirement unconstitutional. Why wouldn't that person have standing in every sense?
If you look at some of the cases, in particular some cases pertaining to a new statute, like the New Hampshire Right to Life case, the plaintiff actually called up the state and said, are you going to enforce this law? And the state said yes. Right, there's no such allegation here. In fact, this is a case where there's no evidence that it's ever been enforced. There's lots of cases similar.
You're representing the Attorney General of the state.
Yes.
Secretary.
No, you're representing the Attorney General. You're a member of the Attorney General's office, right?
That's right.
That's who you work for. Now, do you know of a single instance? Does your office know of a single instance where anyone's been prosecuted under these statutes that are at issue here?
No, Your Honor.
Is there a reason why the Secretary of State could not say the following? Mm-hmm. California statutory law requires that circulation shall be voters. However, it is the position of the Secretary of State that this statute is probably unconstitutional. See such and such.
Well, I'll tell you what I've been able to get from the Secretary of State, actually, is that under Article 3, Section 3.5 of the California Constitution, the Secretary of State cannot declare the requirement unenforceable.
I'm not saying that
they should declare
it unenforceable. They should inform people of the truth.
Yeah. In her view, it cannot successfully be enforced due to the likelihood that an appellate court would hold it unconstitutional.
Why can't I tell people that in a piece of paper instead of misrepresenting the facts?
I think Judge Berzon is suggesting it go in the form.
It is accurate, and in fact, is
but it's incomplete. Balancing
act to maintain here.
Right, but what?
And the problem, the difficulty that she faces here is all state government is shrinking and facing limited budgets. She no longer has a legal staff or an opinion unit that creates. Opinions like the one that was the 1980 opinion that you granted judicial notice of. And so she would have to divert resources to scouring the books, finding statutes that are probably unenforceable, and preparing
the
statutes.
But you have done the work in this. You have done the work, legal work, in this case. I think that this is not, again, anything about the actual issue that's in front of us.
Yes.
However, I think that Judge Berzon is trying to give practical advice, which is, add a footnote to the page that says you must be, Statute X requires that you live in the area that you're circulating the petition in. Footnote just what you read to us.
I think that
I can't declare this unenforceable, however, I have my doubts. that's the complete truth.
And it's never been enforced.
Well, and she can even cite the cases that are in our brief that hold to that effect. In an ideal world, I think that would be appropriate. It would certainly be appropriate.
Is that the sort of thing that could be accomplished?
What this case presents, though, is the
Libertarian Party allegations perhaps could be amplified, but and they could. So the question is, why don't we give them leave to amend, or should we give them leave to amend? In the following respect, they say the party says we want to associate with people who are not residents of the particular places and have them represent us. And they don't say specifically, but we will encounter resistance because these people will be told by the Secretary of State that they can't do it. But that would be a fairly credible allegation were it made, because they are being told by the Secretary of State that they can't do it. Why wouldn't that? There is a round of elections coming up, so suppose they put in as well, and particularly we want with respect to the November 2012 election to do this. Would that be a good allegation as to which they'd have standing?
I don't believe so, but
because your ultimate position is no matter what they said, they couldn't have standing because it's not being enforced.
Yes.
Whether it was directed at a specific election and whether they said that, or we have members who want to do this, we're associational standing, we have members who want to do this, and we believe that, however, that when they're told by the Secretary of State that they can't do it, they're a law-abiding people, they're not going to do it. And the fact that it isn't enforced isn't going to matter, they're not going to do it.
The district court's ruling to sustain our motion without leave to amend is subject to an abuse of discretion standard. And these plaintiffs have not alleged or argued in their papers that they could allege a survivable cause of action.
But I'm asking you about futility, and your ultimate argument is futility. And that's what the reason why there was no leave to amend is because you're arguing it's futile, and the district court seemed to think so, too.
Well, they were given a chance, and what they came up with was some campaign or some literature.
Counsel, let me ask you.
What's missing here is any real-world allegation that they actually refrained from doing something. They haven't even alleged that.
Well, I know that. That's why I asked you the question I asked about the person who would come in and say, "I want to do this now, and I can't, and I want this taken away." But let me ask a different question entirely, which is, given the fact that in your legal opinion, not only has this law never been enforced, but the Secretary doesn't want to enforce it because she believes that it's problematic, and Judge Berzon has suggested some practical ways to work around this, would this be a case that would benefit from mediation to come up with some kind of explanation that would satisfactorily describe the state of affairs as it currently exists and maybe involve recommendations for legislation? I don't know what it could involve, but do you think that mediation would be of assistance in this matter?
I would like to hold off on answering that question until I present another consideration, which I think really cuts to the bottom line.
Well, you have 54 seconds total. So.
Yeah. The problem here is a plaintiff entitled to scour the statutes, find something to quibble about, file a lawsuit, and be dead bang right on the law?
I would think everything be right if this was not in that piece of paper.
I'm sorry.
Everything you're saying would be right if this was not in that piece of paper. But if somebody you're taking what seems to me to be a fairly cynical position, or disturbing position, which is that people can be told by the Secretary of State what they have to do, but they should know that they don't really have to do it because nothing's going to happen to them. That's your position. In other words, people should go around defying what they're told, not just what's in the statute book, but what they're specifically told when they go to do something is the law because nothing's going to happen to them. That's your position.
Our real position at this point is that these are not the appropriate plaintiffs to raise the issue, and these are not the appropriate facts on which to raise
that,
the
and your
issue.
End result is there is no appropriate person because it's not enforced.
The case law that has dealt with functionally equivalent statutes shows what an appropriate situation is for the court to intervene.
Counsel, do you intend to answer my question? Your time has expired, and I.
Well, that's not his time.
I haven't. I didn't know the clock was running on my time, but I haven't.
And I have the same question. It seems to me to be a fairly wise thing to do.
Whether mediation would be
yes.
The reason I'm hesitant to say yes is that this would open the door for them to seek attorney's fees, and all this really is about is, you know,
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. And that's part of mediation.
To sue the state on dead letter law, and collect money when the state
well,
says, "Oh
we
yeah,
don't,
you're right. We've got to
we
clean
don't,
that."
We don't know that, and that's part of a mediation, presumably. That you could say, "We'll make these changes, and we'll pay you $8." And I mean, I don't know what it might produce, but I understand your position.
Yeah. So the difficulty we're facing from the state standpoint.
They're not going to ask for money. They're from Dallas. They don't need money.
Well, the state has to assume that any outcome here that they gave the plaintiffs relief would at least encourage others to start scouring the statutes for laws like this. And
well,
plenty of
to
them.
Me, as I to repeat again, everything turns on the fact that it isn't only in the statute book. If it were only in the statute book, it would be a different thing. It is not only in the statute book. It is in the directions you are giving to people. That's an entirely different matter.
Can I tell you this? I've been listening to floodgate arguments.
Yes.
You know, for, I don't know, 45 years. And my feet are still dry.
Yes. The water rises slowly.
I thought that was a pretty good joke.
Thank you, Your Honor. At the core of this is, you know, if you think they still have or should have standing, there's the further question, is this a wise case in which to take the issue up? And as I argued in my papers, that the Preserved Shorecliff homeowners case shows a real-world situation in which these statutes do arise and in which this statute was declared for
functioning. If I were you, I would advise my clients the following, that tomorrow they should change the directions in the way somewhat similar to what we said, without waiting for anybody to enjoin you. And then, if you want, you can fight about fees on Buchanan grounds and say that there was no judgment saying so. But why you would advise them to continue to tell people something that isn't so and that they will not enforce, I do not understand.
The Secretary of State, I should be very clear, does not enforce the election laws. If she believes that the laws
she
are
writes the forms.
This is true.
Okay, that's all that Judge Berzon was talking about.
The plaintiffs or the ballot circulators in the Preserved Shorecliff case had an easy workaround. They said, okay, if this is the state of the law, we're not even going to challenge it. We'll just have everybody who signs their petition sign this additional piece of paper that says they're their own circulator. And that finesses the problem. And the court cited that. So when you wait until a real-world situation comes up before you start dealing with the realities of a case or of a law, then the facts present the basis for wise adjudication. But what this is presenting is an abstract question.
I don't know whether California does, but many states still have statutes on the books forbidding abortion across the board, right? They just never, I mean, they may have been declared invalid, but they are still there. If somebody puts out if the State Department of Education, of Health, puts out a sends to every high school girl in the state a statement saying that it's illegal under statute so-and-so of this state to have an abortion under any circumstances, would anybody have the ability to complain about that?
I would think yes, and for a couple of reasons. First of all, that would be a criminal statute.
That's unenforced. In fact,
that
declared unconstitutional.
It's a criminal statute, and this is very significant in the cases. When there is a threat of a criminal prosecution, the mere existence of a statute is found to be chilling. There are several cases to that effect.
That the mere existence of a directive and an official piece of paper telling somebody that you have to do X that was written yesterday is a sufficient threat.
If the threat is one of criminal prosecution, this changes the landscape. And the cases are quite consistent on this point. When there's no threat of criminal prosecution and no history of criminal or even civil enforcement, I have not found a single case in which the plaintiff was permitted to sue in the abstract on the theory that they case.
All right. Do you have a case in which a current directive from a state agency to a discrete set of people saying you must do X is not sufficient to prove standing to say no, we don't have to do X, even if nobody's going to send them to jail?
I'm not aware of any such case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Will I have the opportunity to actually present my argument, or
no? I don't think so.
You already made it.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
My learned friend talks about the real world. Here's what the real world looks like. My clients are an active FCC, FEC ballot qualified political party, the Libertarian Party, and two political activists. What they do is they circulate petitions to obtain signatures to get libertarians and other political fellow travelers on political ballot access. Where to start? My clients were not scouring the statute books for an offensive statute. And let's be clear, this statute is patently unconstitutional.
That's not in front of us. That issue is not in front of us.
It's unconstitutional per Nader v. Brewer, 531 F3rd 1028.
The legal issue in front of us right now is whether your clients have the standing to make that argument. But that argument per se is not in front of us. What is your client's view on the possibility of mediation to get a practical?
There will be no resolution of this issue until a federal court enjoins the practice of notifying people and commanding them to do things that they shouldn't have to do because they're unconstitutional. But I'll participate in mediation if the court would wish. I don't think it will be effective. There's two circuit precedents here that control the outcome of this case respecting standing. The first is CPLC v. Getman, 2003. Self-censorship is the constitutionally sufficient injury in fact that confers standing on my clients, these plaintiffs' appellants, to make the allegations they have in the complaint and sustain their suit well past 12b-6 or 12c procedural posture. Very significantly, ARL Pack v. Bayless, 2003. What's significant about this case is this case was written by, the decision was authored by Judge McKeon, who happened to be the author of this court's en banc decision in the Thomas case that the district court relied upon and my learned friend relies upon in his briefs and his oral argument before this court. And Judge McKeon easily dispatched and distinguished.
McKeown.
I'm sorry, McKeown. No, McKeown. I debated the pronunciation before I came up here. We couldn't figure it out. Okay. But Judge McKeown had no problem in the ARL PAC case, which is almost identical circumstances, dispatching the Thomas argument the district court relied on in about one paragraph. And he adopted the Supreme Court's teaching in Dombrowski, which says, again, that self-censorship, refraining from doing something that you're constitutionally entitled to do, which is obeying the law, which, as Judge McKeown observed, is a good thing. We don't want people to show disrespect for the law. And he dispatched the Thomas argument and reversed that district court's decision, which relied upon his own en banc decision. So Judge McKeown had no problem distinguishing the facts and circumstances of Thomas from these political ballot access cases. So my clients were not scouring the statute book. It's what they do. They read the proclamations of the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State says, you must be a registered voter in the district. You must swear to that upon penalty of perjury.
The two individual clients certainly know, and the organization, as a qua organization, knows that if they don't do that, well, you say that the form essentially requires would not allow them to submit it because they either have to lie or but we don't know that. I mean, I guess one of the lacks of
there's a perversity here, Judge, if I might. There's something perverse about this. If
excuse me, you just interrupted me.
I'm sorry, Judge. Yes.
And in fact, you completely lost my train of thought, so go ahead.
I'm sorry, Judge. The perverse situation here is that if they don't file the circulator affidavit, or if they modify it under California law per the Secretary's own January 2010 memorandum the signatures won't be counted. That is an abridgment of their First Amendment political speech rights. The only way they stand a chance of having the signatures they gather counted is if they, in fact, fill out a perjurious affidavit, and that's detected by the Secretary of State and election workers. In that event, it may be possible that the signatures will be counted, notwithstanding the false statement regarding registered voter status. That's where we find ourselves here.
But you haven't tried it.
I'm sorry?
You haven't tried it. In other words, you could advise your people to take the form, put in their right addresses, and not check off the penalty of perjury and hand it in and see what happens. And if they say this isn't a good form, then you've got standing.
Well, and there's no reason to believe that my clients would ever find out what the administrative disposition of their circular affidavit and those signatures would be. There's no mechanism by which the election workers have to report to people, except if it's judicially challenged, as to which signatures and circulator affidavits were considered sufficient and which weren't.
It goes into the
administrative black hole, and they'll never know. And this is a concrete issue. Based on this circuit's precedence in Getman and Bayless in 2003, particularly Judge McKeown's decision, which easily distinguished the Thomas facts, I think it's virtually beyond reasonable argument that my clients had standing to raise this issue. They refrained from doing that which the law prohibits. They're in a Hobson's choice of sacrificing constitutional right or obeying the dictates of the Secretary of the State. The Secretary of State, contrary to the arguments made on appeal, has enforced this statute, the petition circulator residency requirement, for a long time and continues to do so. And based on this circuit's controlling precedent, the case should be reversed. If the court deems it necessary to amplify on the allegations in the complaint, we wouldn't certainly be opposed to a reversal with leave to amend, but I've drafted the complaint with my team of lawyers and paralegals, and we drafted the amended complaint, and contrary to my learned friend's arguments up here, there were specific allegations that they were refraining from doing that which they do, which is political activism, which is circulating petitions for signatures to get like-minded political activists on ballots. There are specific allegations in the complaint that they had refrained and resisted from doing that which they intended and wanted to do, political association, political speech, and political expression. That's in the amended complaint. I don't know what more one could, and one doesn't have to, allege anymore to survive. The Secretary would have this court rewrite standing laws and pleading requirements and create a heightened pleading standard because of the nature of the case. That certainly isn't the law of this circuit. It shouldn't be the law of this circuit. And this circuit has precedent that controls the disposition. The case should be reversed and remanded for further proceedings for the ultimate determination that the statute at question is clearly unconstitutional per this court's other binding precedent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. All right. Think about what we've told you, and we wish you a good day. And-